Welcome to Front Row Backstage, the show that takes you behind the velvet ropes of the media world. I'm LCC student Greg Trimmer, and each week we'll explore the stars you see on screen, stage, and radio, and the tech and talent making the magic happen behind it. From unsung heroes to spotlight sensations, we've got the stories you won't hear anywhere else. So grab your popcorn and let's dive in. Welcome to Front Row Backstage. Today, I am thrilled to introduce Caleb Eubanks, a talented multi-instrumentalist and songwriter who has been making waves in the music world, I personally think. This man has made multiple strides in a very short period of time. He's a personal friend of mine. Caleb's journey began just 5 years ago, teaching himself to play acoustic guitar, bass, and drums. His unique blend of folk, rock, and indie creates a sound that's both raw and deeply personal. Beyond his music, Caleb is a devoted husband and proud father. Drawing inspiration from his family life and everyday experiences, his songs resonate with honesty and heart, capturing the beauty in life's simple moments. So let's dive into Caleb's story and explore the artistry behind his music. Welcome, Caleb.
Hey, man. How's it going?
Fantastic. So yeah, like we mentioned before, you are very self-taught.
Yes.
And when I met you, even just like four years ago, really only playing bass.
Yeah.
So things have developed really, really quick.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that self-taught approach.
Well, first things first, I'm stealing what you said about capturing the beauty in life's simple moments. I'll be writing that tonight. Thank you. Being self-taught for me, a lot of it comes from the fact that I grew up homeschooled. So my experience, I didn't have a lot of opportunities to learn from other people. So in all my years playing music, the only time I've ever had a lesson was I had one time I sat down with a fellow bassist and they didn't teach me anything and we moved on. So
solid.
Yeah, man. I learned everything from books and just kind of went from there. It was the Hal Leonard books I kind of just flew through. And really for me, it's just I want to do it. So I'm going to figure out how to do it. And YouTube's a great resource. So, yeah, the hardest one was singing. That one I got a little bit of help from my wife on, but no formal lessons. So being self-taught is mostly just out of necessity. Love to get lessons maybe one day. We'll see.
Yeah. So just to kind of start on a little bit of background, especially like with the early beginnings. Obviously, like when I met you, you were just a bassist. And I know you've kind of been a bassist for a while.
Yeah.
So where did your passion for music start? Mm-hmm. What kind of made you choose bass? Like what was the root of that? Like where do you think that passion came from and why did it grow?
You know, I think that bass for me was something I picked up. I just wanted to play music at my local church and just be involved. Mm-hmm. So firstly, for me, it was a community thing, just getting connected with other people. But I found as I did it, as a kid, I really struggled. I didn't feel like I was good at anything growing up. And bass was that first thing that like, oh, I'm actually like kind of good at this. Like not great. I'm not going to be, you know, writing any solos on bass anytime soon, but.
You don't want to release a slap bass jazz album or.
I might want to, but you don't want to hear it. That would be brutal for all of us. No, I mean, that was a thing, man. I realized I was good at it and I hadn't had the experience before. So that was super motivating to me and going from bass to other things because once I realized I could do it, it's kind of all I wanted to do. So that was a huge component for me of getting started. And then just the affirmation of others for sure.
What age were you when you started learning bass?
I picked up the bass for the first time on my 14th birthday. I had a friend reach out and they were like, hey, we know you tried to play guitar. I tried and I failed. How about you try bass? I was like, well, oh, I guess. So I took I think it was like $85 and bought the cheapest bass on Amazon and got it on my 14th birthday and never looked back from there. That was when I started.
Awesome. Awesome. So we've talked about your very quick transition. Mm-hmm. So like, where did the inspiration or drive come from bassist to, hey, I'm going to learn other stuff now? because, you know, it sounds like when you started, like, that's like you planned on that was all you were ever going to do. Like, so where did that change happen, and where did the motivation and inspiration from that happen?
Yeah, it definitely started for me. It was probably just shortly before you and I met. It wasn't very long before that at all that I had sat down and kind of started playing around with learning the acoustic guitar. Like I said, I failed the first time as a kid. And after years of playing bass, I was like, all right, I think I can figure this out. Really, though, the drive was playing bass by yourself is no fun. you sit there, maybe you can find a drum track, and that's a little more fun. But really, it's just not a good time by yourself,
right.
Unless you're playing slap, bass, jazz, solos, which I'm not good at. So that was really the drive for me, was I couldn't enjoy playing through a song, whether it was a song from church or a song I was trying to write. Writing on bass is not easy. So that was where acoustic came from.
Well, no, I mean, I can't imagine writing on bass is easy considering, I mean, it's all low notes. You can't really write a song all in that register. Like, that's just not feasible.
You could. It just would be, and you know, I'm going to say good. It'd be boring. I can say
no,
it's boring,
it would be
but
it would be a terrible song.
Somebody would be like, oh, no, we can do that. But I mean, I don't do very well with that. So
me personally, I would probably not listen to that. It sounds like that if you had a song that was all in like the, 40 to 60 hertz register, I feel like it would just hurt my ears.
The song would be called Hanging in the Subs. that's all it would be. Maybe I'll try it. I don't know. That sounds kind of fun. I'm going to listen back to this. There's a lot of good ideas already. That's two songs. First, 2 minutes here. Cool. Drums was very much... acoustic was because I wanted to learn how to play something I could sing with, right? Singing was because my wife, for the first time anyone ever did this, looked at me and said, Caleb, I think you can sing. And everyone else my whole childhood had laughed at me when I tried to sing. So completely different. That motivated me a lot there. But drums, that was just because we had drummers leaving at the church. And I was like, all right, forget it. I can't keep on watching us try to recruit people to play drums. I was like, screw it. I'm going to learn to play the drums because why not? So I learned how to play drums on the couch. It was great.
On the couch?
On the couch, yeah.
Explain that a little bit.
Yep. So if you play familiarity with drums, right? So you typically have a consistent count happening on a cymbal somehow. You have a kick foot and you have a snare typically, right? And that's how you're building your beat. Well, you don't need a drum kit to learn that. So I took a few songs, simple songs, and I put them on YouTube and my TV. And I would sit there with two drumsticks and I would hit, my right hand would hit on the arm of the couch. My left hand would hit on a box in front of the couch for a snare drum, and I would stomp on the floor. And that was how I learned how to play the drums, was literally playing on my couch. It had nothing to do with a drum kit at that point.
You're just taking a page out of AJR's book, doing everything in your living room.
Yeah. I saw them live. Dude, they are wild live.
Well, you know, even still today, even now that they're playing arena tours, they still produce all of their music in their apartment living room that they share.
Kudos to them, man. I went into a concert for them. I was at Pine Knob, and I actually had only heard them briefly on the radio. My brother wanted me to go. Huge fan. And so I went in pretty fresh, right? And I was like, holy crap, these guys are wild. So it's crazy here. It was produced in the living room.
What album? Do you know what album
it was? I think it was off of OK Orchestra.
Okay.
I believe is what we were at that point. And of course, they played some of the old hits. But really good. So good.
Yeah. Great band, but moving on.
Sorry, that was sidetracked.
No, it's hey, listen, that's what it's about, man. So that's just super cool. Like this whole self-taught approach.
Yeah.
Really raw, really down to earth. Like you learn drums in your living room without even a drum set. You know, some people would say, oh, I learned drums in my living room, but they have a drum set up in their living room. You literally were on your couch
sir.
That's amazing. I can't even
I would need to take some pictures of myself doing that.
I'm extremely impressed.
I could do it here, but it would sound terrible. So we'll just not do that. Paying people with that.
So you talked about how you are starting to write music.
Yep.
When did you start to hear or feel the need to start writing?
It's evolved substantially. Initially, where it came from was our church was trying to write music, and there was a big conversation about that, people wanting to figure out how to write. And so I just kind of tried a little bit. And initially it was out of that place, but very quickly for me, I found that it was something of a journal, where it was easier for me to get my thoughts out in a song than it was just in like, you know, a regular journal entry, right? Mm-hmm. So I found that if I could make something make sense in a song, like a moral, right, it would help me understand how it applied to my life, and I could feel like I was satisfied in that understanding. So really for me, it became a motivating force of, if I'm struggling with something, I'm going to sit down with a guitar and I'm going to figure out how to make it make sense. And that's how I've written multiple of my songs. And that's really where it's been super motivating to me to learn it quickly and take that up. So that's been over the last, again, 4 or 5 years, pretty quick here. That's kind of brought me where I am now. So I've written probably, and people aren't going to hear most of these, but I've written probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 30 to 35 songs at this point. Most of them just for my own personal use, but in some cases they're being shared in the near future.
Amazing. Amazing. So walk us through your writing process. And I'm sure it is very different now than it was at the beginning, but yeah. Kind of like walk us through what that looked like, that process of getting into that headspace, and what the process of doing it looked like when you first started writing.
Yep.
And what it looks like now.
Yeah. When I first started writing, it was entirely, I'm going to sit down and play 4 chords over and over again until I write something I like. And that sucked. I thought it was good. It was not good. So most of my worst songs were written that way, playing the same chords over and over again. My writing is at its best when I'm writing without an instrument in my hand and then going back and adding the music later. So whether that's just sitting at a table with a pencil and a piece of paper, I've literally written songs riding in the car with voice memos and just repeatedly recording it until I had a whole song.
So what you're telling me is you're a poet that adds music to your poetry.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, sort of, yeah. Something like that, yeah. Maybe I'm like primarily a cappella, and then I just take away that portion of it. So I'm always, you'll hear me like singing ridiculous stuff in the car, and then all of a sudden I'll go home and now it's a full song. So yeah I guess I would go with poet, sure. We'll go with that. Poet sounds nice. I've always wanted to be a poet.
So you mentioned the 4-chord thing.
Yeah.
So you mean like every worship song that has ever been released? Mm-hmm. Is that okay?
Worship, sure. And pop song. Yeah. See Ed Sheeran's video. See Ed Sheeran in court over his lawsuit. All the things. Yeah, it's all there.
So you've talked about how your music is inspired by a lot of things in your personal life. Mm-hmm. You mentioned writing things about that are inspired by your wife or mm-hmm. your newborn son. Yep. Well, not so much newborn anymore, but
yeah, 5 months.
Five months.
He's getting a little.
Wow, is it really five months?
5 months, man. It was
God,
crazy.
That
was last week.
That doesn't
week.
Feel like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, but like, talk us through what that's like to take something that you feel either towards or about one of those two, and mm-hmm. kind of, or even just natural life experiences, and take that and put that emotion into a song.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I think that I don't always feel the emotion in the moment. It's really easy for me to detach from that a little bit while I'm writing. So I won't be feeling something as I'm writing it, and then I'll kind of listen to it at the end and be like, dang, like, yeah, that is how I feel. Most clearly for me, this is I wrote a song called Temporary Souvenirs that I really like. It's all about change. It's all about how in life we have these memories and they're temporary souvenirs, so they're fading, right? We don't get to keep them. So that song for me, I wrote the chorus first, and then after I experienced a huge change in my life, leaving a job that I was at for a very long time, working with kids, and really, really hard leave for me. That song, then I finished it, and it just became this like anthem for me of like understanding how hard it is to experience change in life, but understanding that you can't do anything about it. It's going to happen, right? So in terms of my kid and my wife, I would say that it just helps me express and understand my appreciation for them. Because I'm not always someone that feels a lot of super strong emotions all the time. So when I can express it like that, I think it makes it something that I understand a little bit better and that I can express to them better. So Yeah, I've written a lot on that front. We've used, that was actually how my wife told me we were pregnant, was using one of my songs.
That's amazing.
Which is really cool. Yeah.
I mean, your passion for music is obviously a very huge passion.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
You're very involved with the worship team at church.
Yes.
And that's a big thing. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of commitment.
Lots of
time. To have that big of a passion for something. So, and especially now that you're a father.
Yep.
Like, how do you find yourself balancing husband, father, musician? How do you find yourself balancing that well?
Yeah, it's hard. So husband, father, musician, and then now just recently back in the elementary classroom. So, you know, everyone always talks about being a underpaid, overworked teacher. I'm not quite as jaded as that. I enjoy it. But yeah, it's 50 hours a week teaching. It's 10 hours a week at the church. And then obviously husband, father, and sleeping in between. So I would say in this season, I know that music has to be at least something that I'm more efficient with, right? So in terms of even writing, right? That's why I write like in the car. It's why I write on a piece of paper when I'm have a moment at work. Just because it can't be something that I come home and say, hey, hi, wife and kid, and I'll see you later. I'm going to go in the bedroom and practice my music and, you know, practice drums. So for me, it's really about efficiency. I have to find ways that I can learn quickly, play quickly, write quickly. So a lot of that ends up being listening time in a car, right? I'm listening to everything I'm writing, recording, any song I have to cover, I'm listening to all the time so that I have everything in my head ready to go. And when I can, when I go to play, I play quickly. And then just trying my best to make sure that I don't forget that the most important part of what I do in my life is spending time with my family. I'd rather suck as a musician and suck as a teacher than suck as a husband or dad. So
yeah,
those priorities always take time.
Those are definitely, I would agree with those. Those definitely need to be the priority for sure. Like that's ultimately important. And I think that's every artist's struggle, whether it's music or acting or whatever. You know, we have all kinds of different artists on this show, and like that's I don't think anybody does it perfectly.
Yeah.
Some people don't do it very well at all.
Yep.
But that balance, like you have to find like the, definitely in your case, like the father, the husband things, those have to be the, like, those have to be the pinnacle. Those have to be the priority.
Yeah. But also at the same time, understanding that like, if it's important to you, you find ways to do it, you know?
Yeah.
And one of the things I would say, like, I think about this a lot, like what's important enough to me that I'm going to do it, even if I can't do it well, I'm going to do it anyways. Mm-hmm. And that's what music is for me, is if even if I start to not be as good, it still matters enough to me to do it and be bad at it as opposed to not do it at all.
For sure.
So I don't know. That's the way I kind of think about it.
No, for sure. Yeah. And you know, like it's what you mentioned, being a fourth grade teacher.
Yeah.
Like that almost becomes a priority within a priority with being a father and husband, because you know, like that's how you provide, right?
Yep, absolutely.
So it's a big thing, and it's about balance and
yeah. When the priorities are now tying into each other in different ways, now it's a whole different level,
right? And balance is so much easier said than done.
Yep,
for sure.
You don't have to be the best, but you have to be good enough to make sure you always do well enough to not get fired.
Right.
In everything you do, because if you lose the job because you're spending time with your wife and kid, then you're not providing for your wife and kid.
Right.
And yeah, so you're right.
Absolutely. It's a whole circle. So you mentioned you're blending genres of folk, rock, and indie in your compositions, which is dope. Are there any specific techniques or instruments that are kind of central to your music? I know you kind of have this like multi-instrumental approach now. Mm-hmm. You've learned multiple instruments. You can play guitar, you can play bass, you can drum, you can sing. Is any of those instruments like, this is the central focal point, without this I wouldn't have a song?
Yeah, I think that you think about folk, you think about rock, you think about indie, and for the most part, all three of those can be boiled down to dude with a guitar, right? guy sitting down and cranking out a song, which is ironic because I think I might be the worst at acoustic of the instruments that I play. For all the writing I do on it, I think I'm better at bass and maybe even drums now than acoustic. But I think that, I mean, without that instrument, I wouldn't be a writer. I can't write sitting on the drum kit, and we've already talked a lot about writing on bass. So using the acoustic guitar in different ways is really what defines your rock and indie and folk genres, in my opinion.
Although you can't write on the drums. However, we have recently had someone on this podcast called the Druid Drummer.
Okay.
And he is a solo percussion act.
Okay.
And that, like, his act is that he's a druid. And I don't even know how to describe it, really, but it's mostly Celtic-style drumming, kind of. But he is a solo percussion act, so I would argue it'd be pretty weird to write on a bass.
Sure.
But percussion has a lot wider frequency range, so...
I mean, that's a good point. I guess I'm maybe limiting percussion to what I experience on a drum kit. If you want to get things involved where you've got some different tones coming in, different pitches. I mean, you got something going on.
Even with a drum set, the drum set sets the rhythm of a song.
True.
I mean, as much as you can play a rhythm chord progression on a guitar, really the drums and the percussion kind of set the rhythm and the beat of a song. So
they do.
I wouldn't dismiss that too much.
It's also really hard though to sing while you're playing drums. So I'd have to actually record as I go.
Also, you mentioned not being able to sing and play bass at the same time, but I have seen lead singers of bands be the bass player.
I think leading from bass isn't bad depending on the music you play. If you're playing highly syncopated music, or if you're trying to play that, you know, again, slap jazz bass or heavy, I think in rock music it's doable because typically you're playing more straightforward rhythms. But when I've played songs that are highly syncopated, it's like, ooh. Gosh. But yeah, I mean, Sting would be a famous one. Lead singer from bass. John Cooper of Skillet would be another one.
Josh Ramsey from Mariana's Trench.
Sure.
I don't know if you know who that is.
You know, my sisters just went to see Mariana's Trench and they showed me a little bit.
They are an amazing band. In fact, funny enough, Josh Ramsey actually wrote Call Me Maybe. He originally wrote it as a punk rock song for Mariana's Trench for his band.
Huh.
And then the director of his label, who happens to be the lead singer of Nickelback, told him, hey, give it to Carly Rae Jepsen and produce it as a pop song.
I kind of want to hear it as a punk rock song now, though. I mean, I think that would be so much more approachable to me than what Call Me Maybe became.
If you go find Mariana's Trench's song "Here's to the Zeros."
Okay,
it's just a single, but he actually there's a lyric in there where he talks about how he wrote "Call Me Maybe." So check it out.
Here's to the Zeros.
So you've had a really quick transition, and even before you started bass, there was a point where you tried acoustic guitar, and you thought, "Crap, am I ever going to be able to do this? Am I ever going to able to be a musician?" So what advice would you give aspiring musicians starting out today that are nervous that they're not going to be able to do it?
Yeah, I think two things. One, you can't rely on anyone else to do it for you. I've had a couple people that have wanted me to help them learn, and I'm more than happy to be a resource. But in my opinion, no one else is going to be a good enough teacher to make you want to do it enough that you're going to actually get it done. Because music takes repetition, and you're going to sound like trash forever. Until one day you sound okay, and then the next 2 years later you'll sound good. It takes a long time, and you have to want it bad enough, and you have to have a routine. So I think you have to be regimented and have a routine with it, but also you can't rely on somebody else to do it for you, a teacher. And that's, I mean, I'm a self-taught guy. Of course, I'm going to have that opinion, but I'm also a teacher, and my job all the time is to get people to care enough to learn something. And that's all well and good for things like math, but for music, it's a different animal. It requires so much of your time.
Yeah.
So my advice would be make a routine, stick to it, and then keep reminding yourself why, because, again, you're going to sound like absolute trash for a while. It's going to be okay.
And listeners, thank you for tuning in today to hear a little bit more about Caleb Eubanks. Thanks for tuning in to Front Row Backstage. We hope you enjoyed this week behind the curtains of the media world. Don't forget to like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram for more information. And join us next week for more stories from the front lines of entertainment. Until then, stay tuned, because whether it's on stage, behind the scenes, or over the airwaves, the real action is everywhere.
Featuring the faculty, staff, students, and others that helped to make Lansing's premier college what it is today. LCC Connect, Mid-Michigan's connection to Lansing Community College. To find out more about our featured programs or to listen on demand, visit us at lccconnect.org.
LCC
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
K-12 Operations at Lansing Community College has been a proud collaborator of the Lansing Promise Scholarship since 2012. The Lansing Promise Scholarship offers graduating high school seniors who live within the Lansing School District and attend a high school within district boundaries an opportunity to attend LCC. Since its inception, over 1,000 enrolled students have saved over $2 million, earning over 400 degrees and certificates, as well as 30,000 credits at LCC. For more information on the Lansing Promise Scholarship, please visit lcc.edu/hope.
So, how are the kids?
Well, Emily made the honor roll.
Oh, good for her.
Yeah, we're really proud of her. Tyler, on the other hand, though.
What's going on?
He's been moody lately, just feeling down and not like himself.
Oh, we've been there. Nick was struggling last spring. He was so anxious and stressed.
Really? What helped?
Well, he joined the soccer team. And ever since, he's been a lot happier. He has more energy, he's less stressed, and he's definitely in a better mood at home. It's made a huge difference.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm glad he's getting out of the house, he's getting some exercise, and he's off his phone for once. It's been good for his mental health.
Sounds like it's been good for your mental health, too.
Participating in Michigan high school sports improves students' physical and mental health. Encourage your son or daughter to get involved. This message presented by the MHSAA and the Michigan Interscholastic Athletic Administrators Association.
The Modern Warehousing Program through the Job Training Center at Lansing Community College is an industry-led program that prepares individuals for frontline material handling and supply chain logistic positions in medical centers, fulfillment centers, warehouses, and factories. Those who complete this program can earn multiple certifications. Visit lcc.edu/JTC training for more information.
LCC
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
Hello, friends, and welcome to Coach Cut's Corner. Streaming bright from Michigan's capital city, this podcast is dedicated to helping you better understand the who, the what, and the why of mental performance, personal growth, and Lansing Stars baseball. Coach Cut's Corner, brought to you by IWASH.
In collaboration with Lansing Community College.
And now here's your host, Stephen Cutter.
We have a special guest today in the WLNZ studios on the campus of Lansing Community College. It is none other than freshman Stars baseball player, Griffin DeVoet. Griffin came to the capital city from Walled Lake Central High School. And I thought you all might enjoy his story. Welcome to the studios.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. We're going to start this off with a bang. Yes or no question only here. Your brother Gavin plays baseball at Michigan. Yeah, he's had his own story, and maybe we'll get into it a little bit. But lock in here. Is it true that your brother Gavin is a better athlete than you?
No, it is not. I would say no.
You like that picture I just gave you?
That's beautiful.
Yep. Okay, so you're gonna hold firm with the no. He's not a better athlete than you.
He would say that himself, I hope.
All right. Well, let's keep it in the family. Tell me and our listeners about your immediate family, including Gavin.
Yeah. So my parents, Jen and Jason, obviously, and then I have an older sister. She's 23 years old. living out in Chicago now. And then my brother, nice, who's 19, and he's a sophomore now at the University of Michigan.
Okay, but he didn't start out. Didn't he commit to like CMU originally?
Yep, so he committed to CMU originally, and then Coach Bischel left, and he decided to open up his recruiting, and it took him down to Ohio State, where he played one season there. Their coach also left, so he went back into the portal and took him to Michigan.
Beautiful, beautiful. I would assume that you've learned a lot from your siblings and also from your brother in the baseball journey.
Yeah, definitely. A lot from both of them.
Okay, okay. You came here as a two-way player. I call that somewhat of a unicorn in baseball because you don't see a whole lot of two-way players in general, both at the college level and, of course, at the professional level. Most people can think of a few two-way players, you know, that have played baseball, but that's not like overall. So even with us at the junior college level, you don't have a lot of kids that play, you know, two ways, which is a stark difference from like high school because you have a lot of kids that pitch and play a position. And I think sometimes that's just out of necessity as well. But how's the process been going for you as a two-way at the college level?
Yeah, I mean, it's been amazing so far. Practices, obviously, you had a little bit longer of a practice and you get to be there longer, which for me never was an issue because...
Yeah, it's a couple hours longer, you know, because we run pretty much separate practices. They do overlap, but, you know, pitchers have their own practice and position players have their own practice. And then, like I said, there's some overlap. But with that, you're basically getting double the practice.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely benefits you, if not every day, but, you know, in the long run, you put in more work than other people, so... You're going to end up being on the other side of it all.
Something that I was thinking about as I was preparing for this podcast, and when you're a college athlete, you at some point will realize that most of your time is spent on that said sport that you're an athlete of. And at times you really have no idea, but if you track it and look at it, you kind of see how much time that you actually put in for the sport. And it's also time mentally that you're putting in because you're thinking about it. You're thinking about what you need to do. And not to digress too far, but athletes often struggle when the game is over for them because they miss the competitiveness. They miss the closeness. They miss the bus rides and the trips and, you know, that kind of stuff. And in the real world, you do miss a lot of those things. But what do you have, I mean, what hobbies or interests do you have that are outside of baseball?
Yeah, I mean, that goes for a long time. Number one, I like social media a lot, expressing myself and kind of putting myself out there. Definitely on YouTube for what some people see. I like to post videos on there, kind of, you know, show what I do.
What kind of videos are you posting on YouTube?
Yeah, so kind of like vlog videos.
Okay.
And they range for a lot of things, but time with friends, and obviously a lot of it is baseball stuff on there, which is what gets people looking at it. So,
do you have a number two besides the social media?
I mean, I have been cutting hair at the apartments, which has been doing good for me.
And you're making money on that?
Oh yeah, just a little bit, but that's for the teammates, so that's good.
I think we talked about that the other day, and were you able to figure out a way that you could add tips to?
We did. We made it work. So I told him $10, and I'd take a tip from $5 to $100. So
okay, is cutting hair something that you've done before?
No. I mean, I've done it with friends. You know, gave them mullets in the past, and me and my brother for sure always has spent time messing around with each other's hair, but.
Okay, so that's pretty interesting. I think it's important to have, especially when you're younger, to have some hobbies and some other interests outside of your main thing because it just gives you a little bit of relief. Sometimes people like to go, you know, golf or, you know, do that other stuff because it just gives you a little bit of relief because when you're in sports, there's a lot of pressure there, and it doesn't matter if you're a coach or a player. There's just a lot of pressure there, and most of that pressure comes from expectations. You know, it's the expectations of the coaching staff. It's the expectations of the fans. It's the expectations of your family. You got all these expectations there, which then creates pressure. And it's nice to be able to do some other stuff where it doesn't matter if you're using CapCut. It's still one of those things where you're getting a little bit of relief. I wanted to ask you, what do you believe might be the greatest challenge for you and or maybe your teammates that you're facing right now? You know, you're about a little over two months into the fall season. You've been going really hard, you know, with practices and lifts and leadership and all the things that you kind of get thrown at you. Plus, you're living on your own for the first time, you know, and so you're trying to figure out, you know, your food and what the, you know, how often you need to clean up stuff. And because you don't have somebody, you know, don't have somebody coming around behind you, reminding you that you've got dishes on the floor or, you know, or maybe even picking them up for you. So what's kind of been your biggest challenge or your teammates' biggest challenges right now?
Yeah, me personally, I think it's been at home back at the apartment. So managing, you know, who's cleaning up what, who's going to do the dishwasher today and stuff like that. So I like to, and my roommates would agree, I like to be the voice of reason there, kind of making sure people get stuff done, because if not, I won't be happy.
Okay, I can appreciate that and certainly understand that. You've been an athlete since you were how old, roughly?
Maybe three.
Yeah, and that's fairly normal. I think we get a lot of recruiting emails into our coaches' offices, and it's always the pretty much the typically the same. I've been playing since a very young age. Now, I haven't gotten one yet, but I'm looking forward to getting one that says I just started playing, you know, last week, and I think I want to play college baseball. Tell me about what other sports did you play besides baseball when you were growing up?
Yeah, I mean, I tried almost every sport, basketball, nice. Soccer, and then football. I never played on a team, but just always playing in the backyard.
Right. What comes to mind when I say, tell me about your worst sports performance?
Oh, worst sports performance. Basketball I was not good at. It was terrible. I played seventh grade and then didn't make the team eighth grade year.
Okay. So seventh grade year was not a solid performance from you.
Definitely
what were you lacking at that point?
Definitely height, size, confidence, a lot of things. So it just wasn't my thing.
Okay. Let's not go too far in this, but confidence, you know, I think you understand at least with what we try to instill in our program, how important that belief system is. Your belief system probably wasn't real high as you're struggling, right? And you weren't able to kind of figure that piece out because maybe you couldn't change your height or your strength at that point. But what would it look like if you could have changed your belief system a little bit? So so basketball, worst sports performance for baseball, what stands out?
Sports performance for baseball?
Yeah.
As in what?
As in failure.
There's some camps, not good, not at all.
You're dropping the G word a lot, but yep. What did you do at some of these camps?
Just rough performances and errors in the infield, and I think it obviously builds you to who I am now. But there's been some showcases where you don't hit the ball, you know, and it's not great. People are watching
it's
you.
It's tough because you got a lot of eyes on you.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, like, I've got to do well. There's expectations. You know, this could be my future and all that. And it becomes tough. I've been fortunate to be able to work a lot of different camps as in my coaching journey. And, you know, you have some empathy for some of the kids that are struggling because a lot of times it doesn't have anything to do with talent. It's just one thing, one little thing stacks on another little thing, and then pretty soon it's a absolute disaster. Yep. And it's like, oh, I just paid a lot of money, or my parents paid a lot of money for this, and I was kind of messed. So let's do a 180. What are some major highlights and achievements in sports that really stand out to you?
Yeah, senior year, I got to throw in our district semifinal game, which was probably one of my best outings I've had in, as a pitcher, going seven innings, no runs, two hits. So that was definitely something I was happy about, especially with a lot of fans and people there.
How many Ks?
Oh, man, at least seven.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Were you playing in the field at that point, too?
Yep.
Yeah. All right. So that stands out. Anything else stand out?
Freshman year, my first home run.
Okay.
That was something I'll probably always remember.
Did you pull the ball?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Got a nice bat flip and, It was fun for sure that year.
Do you have that on your YouTube page?
It's not on the YouTube page, but it's out there. It's really? For sure out there okay. somewhere.
I think Coach Mo will have to find that and see if we can bring that up. The comeback, and it's kind of a quote I want to bring up, but it's the comeback is always stronger than the setback. What does that make you think of?
Yeah, obviously a current injury we have right now and to come back better.
You've kind of been dealt with some, you know, a pretty significant injury that you've is not something that you can't come back from. It's not something that you're going to need to spend the next, you know, year or 2 years rehabbing from. But you've been handed some cards. And I truly believe, like, when people say enjoy the moments or appreciate what you have because it can be taken away, even though that it's said and it can be sent from people that you really respect, it's really hard to do that until you've had the experience of that. Once you've had the experience of that, somebody saying something about the comeback can be great and appreciate what you have, it hits differently. Do you think that's going to hit differently for you moving forward?
Yeah, definitely. You realize when you're not there, kind of all the things you miss out on and the things that you wish you were there for, and you take advantage of the little things, definitely, and kind of makes you think of what you're going to do differently when you are back playing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's, I think, what I label as experience. Yep. And the more life experiences that you can get, the more prepared you are for life. So as I mentioned earlier, we're about 8 weeks in, a little bit over. What have you learned so far in your 8 weeks here? What stands out to you?
Yeah, definitely have learned a lot. Definitely learned how to build new relationships and connections with a lot of different people. People coming from about every different place of the state. So you get to learn a lot from people. That's probably the biggest thing.
Why Lansing? Why'd you end up here?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of speaks for itself. The win, great program, great coaches, and I mean, I knew people that were here prior to me and who have only said good things, and I wanted to be a part of that.
Yeah. Oh, well, hopefully they're saying great things, but we've always found, like, the people in our program are the best advertisers because everybody's journey is not sunny in 75. Everybody's had to work through some stuff, whether it's injuries or anything else. They've had to work through some stuff. Most people don't have the golden paved road for them at this level. They have to work. And I think that's why at the four-year level, JUCO kids are treated differently or thought of differently because they know they don't have everything that they do at the Division I level or Division II level,
sure.
NAIA, at the strong NAIA level. And so you've got to work for it. And there's an appreciation that comes from that too. There's an understanding that if you really want something, you've got to go after it. And it really doesn't matter what that is that you want. It can be in sports, but it can be in life too. What about the campus? What have you experienced about the campus here?
Yeah, definitely more beautiful than anyone would probably think. Very nice buildings. The people here and the resources that you're provided with is something I didn't think I'd have. And it's definitely been a blessing, especially while being out and having people to connect with and talk to kind of get right back on track.
What about when I say Muni?
Oh, that place is special. I'll remember this probably for the rest of my life, pushing that fence back up. that's something you don't get anywhere else.
And what he's talking about is our center field fence. We had like hurricane force, 70 mile an hour winds come through in a storm. We happened to be on the field practicing at that point. We were just finishing, and our center field fence pretty much blew over. So we took our roster the next day and went out there and pushed it back up. So that was pretty special. That's a place that all of our players, since we, you know, made that our home, have put a lot of time, effort, energy into making it better. There's a lot of things going on there right now that keep adding and making it better and better. And it's pretty cool to see that all the bricks that get stacked at Muni and how much of a legacy there really is there. We could go through that entire ballpark and talk about, you know, this group did this group did that. It's pretty neat. Tell me about elevators. Stars take the steps. What were you thinking when you heard that? And then, you know, you've had to kind of buy into that and be a part of that.
Yeah, at first I was just like, all right, you know, this is different. This is interesting for sure. You don't really hear that anywhere else. And then I like it. We started, you know, the team starts talking about it. Don't see someone on an elevator, and stars take the stairs. It's something I've said to my parents and stuff. And I was in the hospital, and my mom couldn't believe that I wanted to go down the stairs after being in the hospital, but I told her stars take the stairs. So yeah, it's something I like.
Yeah. And you know, that's really come from the journey is going to take a little extra work, and you're not going to be able to take an elevator to the top of anything. And I don't like elevators, because if you're at a higher point and you get in it and you push the button, a lot of them will say going down. And it's like, you know, I'm trying to go up. We're trying to go up as a program. And I think that it's just more of a mindset than anything else. It's not something you see on the t-shirts, but you see the elevators in our country are extremely nice. And you'll notice most of the stairs are not. And the reason that is because most people are not taking the stairs. We have something that's called leadership every week. And we do a lot of leadership in our program, and we do a lot of things to teach leadership. We try to teach a lot of lessons. We have speakers that come in. We show videos. We do different things, the selections being shown, you know, and that's kind of a tried and true thing. What have you kind of taken away from that? Because that's a different thing too, and that's a different environment. And I think you had the joke of the week this week to tell, and you know, some people were critics in the back and some people were laughing. So what have been some of your lessons from that?
Yeah. Number one, it takes you outside your comfort zone. I think everyone kind of will always have the opportunity to talk, or you should be at least talking. So it takes you out of your comfort zone, and then you get to hear from a lot of amazing people who come from the same place as you and from different places as you. And I think I've taken away a lot of great things from that, and I enjoy it.
Yeah. I think communication is one of those things that's somewhat of a generational thing, but it becomes a little bit harder to communicate. It's not too hard to do a vlog or, you know, type some stuff. It's not too bad. But sitting in a room, you know, amongst your peers and having to communicate is more of a challenging thing. What you will find, though, is that's the kind of stuff that will help you down the road when you need to communicate to your other teams, to your families, and to things like that. It's just a little bit easier. And you're just going to have to work on your jokes of the day. You've got to get everybody laughing at those. So one of the last things I wanted to talk about was at the top of our player sheets, there's a quote, and it says, "The average person has a lifestyle that is incompatible with athletic success. If you want to be a successful athlete, you have to accept not being normal." Does that resonate with you when you hear that?
Yeah, 100%.
Any examples of why it's different to be an athlete than a person? Because, like, for me, I think about, like, athletes are held to a higher standard, and I know we've talked about this to some degree in leadership, but you know, you can get yourself in trouble, and a lot of people are going to know about it if you're an athlete or a coach. But if you have an everyday normal job, and you can be doing a great work with that normal job, and you get in trouble, really only a small, you know, amount of people are going to know about it. And so you're held to higher standards. And a lot of times those standards aren't the standards that the people, that the critics out there, that they're not holding themselves to those standards, but you're held to these other standards. And when you're an athlete, basically with what it's saying is it's incompatible to athletic success. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is a higher standard. And with success, I mean, you can have a bad day, and you can go home and be down about that for a while, and or you could choose not to be, and you can bounce back. But I think athletes for sure kind of have a mentally, they're in a harder place and more thoughts in their head for sure.
Yeah, And I think a big piece of that helps prepare you for the next journey you're going to have. I appreciate you being in the studios today, and I hope you've enjoyed your time. Make winning in life your habit, not your goal. Excellence is a practice, not a prize. Build great habits and practices that serve you so you can serve others. Enjoy the moments in life as they go by in a blink of an eye. Until next time, thank you to all of our listeners. We are all playing a game we can't win, so why not play it to the utmost? Go all in and go Stars. Coach Cut's Corner is recorded live in the WLNZ studios. Engineering and production assistance are provided by Dedalian Lowry. Thanks for listening. And if you enjoyed today's podcast, please share it and follow us on all the platforms of social media. You can find more about our program at lccstars.com, and donations to our baseball program can be made at the same site. See you next time.
This is LCC Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
The Cesar Chavez Learning Center's Access Program at Lansing Community College creates a community on campus for underrepresented students, providing them with a support network and multiple layers of academic, social, and professional experiences. Access also incorporates workshops and resources that assist in educational and career advancement. To find out more about Access, visit lcc.edu and search Access Program.
The Adult Enrichment Program at LCC offers classes in watercolor, creative welding, motorcycle safety, photography, and more. All classes are non-credit. Information about the Adult Enrichment Center is available at lcc.edu/keeplearning.
This has been a presentation of LCC Connect, a weekly program that features the voices, vibes, and vision of Lansing Community College. All shows featured on LCC Connect are recorded at the WLNZ studio, located on LCC's downtown campus. Each program is podcast-based and can be heard anytime at lccconnect.org. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on one of our shows, connect with us by emailing lcc-connect@lcc.edu.